Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome back, Redheads, to another episode of the Redheads Book Club November edition. This was our spookiest month yet, and I'm so excited to catch up with my girlies. Bex, let's start with you since this month was a Becky's choice. How are you?
I'm so great. It is spooky season. I'm feeling good. Honestly, it's like 70 degrees in New York City, so I feel like we had like a touch of fall, and now we're back to like a semi-temperate summer climate. But everything's great. I'm just really excited. We were just talking about my girl Jax coming to New York, celebrating a certain somebody's, 30th birthday coming up. So I'm just feeling all the feels, getting the gang back together.
The gang will be back together. Margo, are you so excited for us to be back together, the Redheads in the flesh?
I'm so excited for the Redheads to be back together and to see my family, even though I was just with them.
Do you miss us already?
So much. You miss me.
So much. Like so much. We were talking about it all day. We talked about it on the toast today. Miss you as always.
As always. Yeah, no, I'm so excited.
And how are you doing in your personal life, Snatchler?
Personally, I'm doing great. Can't complain.
So good.
Yeah.
How's your other podcast going?
My other podcast is going great. Thanks for asking. Nicole's good. You know, we're just keeping on, keeping on.
Great. And Dana, how goes it with you?
It goes. Not much to update. Oh, my sister got engaged last weekend. That was very exciting.
Oh, mazel tov.
Thank you.
Mazel tov, Jesse.
Thanks, everybody. It was the most gorgeous day out on Sunday. It was like 70 degrees. Beautiful, beautiful occasion. Great time. And besides that, not too much going on. Very excited to get into this book.
Yeah, I'm excited for another beautiful day of the Redheads. Also, before we get into everything, we launched merch 2 weeks ago and we didn't talk about it on the last episode. So things are still available at shopmorningtoast.com in the Redheads category. We launched 4 sweatshirts, 1 long sleeve, a tote bag, 2 hats, a mug, notebook. The merch is so sickening and I think some things are sold out, but a lot of it is still available. So definitely get some if you're interested. I love the Redheads branding and I think it makes for the cutest merch and also a great conversation starter when people are like, oh, what's that? And you're like, let me tell you about my book club and then you can talk about books. And it's really a great icebreaker. So check it out. Also, a lot of people have asked if the sweatshirt material of this collection is the same as the collection we dropped 2 years ago. The answer is no. We dropped that last collection in like February. So the sweaters were really thick and like hardy,
robust.
These sweatshirts are more lightweight, like more what you would expect from a typical crew neck, nothing too thick. So there's something for everyone. Check it out at shopmorningdose.com and rep your girlies.
The merch is so unbelievable. I almost am like needing to distance myself from it because it's all I've been wearing, and I think like at some point people are going to be like, is this like your mental institution wardrobe, because like, girl, you have got to change your clothes. I could not recommend it more. The sweatshirts are the perfect lightweight / heavy material. Like it's the only option, I'm telling you.
I'm wearing the white one right now and it is amazing.
You look great, Dana.
Thank you. It's one of my favorite from the selection.
I mean, I've literally lived
in the gray. Margo has been wearing the gray long sleeve every single day while she was in
Florida. I love that one too.
No, I love it so much, and I've been wearing it like every day since I've been back. I did finally throw it in the laundry, so I'm going to not see her for like a day, but I will miss her.
Snatch, I saw you wrapping it this morning. It touched my heart. I wasn't expecting it for you, the gray long sleeve.
No, like I wasn't either. Like it's not my normal like thing that I go to. Like normally I'm like a big sweatshirt girl, but something about this one, it just really hit me.
Yeah, I left it on her bed like in a cute pile when she came to stay with me, and I think it just sparked resonated joy with the counts. Plus, that one was a large. I think you're liking the oversized nature of it, counselor.
Yeah, yeah, it like hits my knee.
Yeah, it's really, really chic. So that's what's new with the brand. We have another great episode of the podcast. The November episode is always a Becky's Choice, of course. And historically, it's been pretty hit or miss, emphasis on the miss. So I'm so excited, historically, the last 2 years.
I thought you were saying this is the miss. And I mean, we're about to get into it. I'm honestly so curious. We haven't talked about it at all.
We haven't talked about it at all. And honestly, I'm really curious to hear your guys' opinions. And I think it will help me form more of my own opinions because I have my own, but I haven't spoken to anyone about it. So I don't know exactly how to feel. And I feel like someone might say something that strikes a chord in me.
So, yeah, I'm excited. Yeah.
You're excited what counts?
To talk about it.
I'm sure you are. I honestly just feel
like I'm at a disadvantage. Like knowing my November historical situation and just like we love a combative snitch.
No. I will warn you, like it's not nearly as bad as it's been. Like I won't be, I'll be like neutral. Five is like middle is neutral. I'll probably be like a 6.5.
Great. Okay.
Yeah.
So before we get into our thoughts, I'm just going to do a little recap of the book for anyone who read it a while ago or didn't read it or just wants to hear me talk more. This month we read Hester by Lori Lico Albanese. It is a book that's a play off of Nathaniel Hawthorne's Scarlet Letter. So I know what the Scarlet Letter is. I think a lot of people know just the theme and the moral of the story, but I don't know that I've ever read the Scarlet Letter on my own. Maybe a class of mine covered it, but I wasn't paying attention. But still, like I know, you know, it's about shame and public shame and et cetera, et cetera. And so this was the author's take on what she thinks happened in Nathaniel Hawthorne's life to lead him to write the Scarlet Letter. At the end of the book, the author makes a note that all of Nathaniel Hawthorne's other books are based loosely on things that happened in his life. And this is the only book where they can't find the historical facts of it being linked to him. So she like wrote some like fantasy fiction fanfic about Nathaniel Hawthorne's probable extramarital affair. And as a concept, I really liked that. The story follows Isabel Gowdy. She's a young girl who's raised in Scotland. She marries a man named Edward, who is an apothecary slash doctor in Scotland. He faces ruin because he's addicted to the poppy, which means like drugs. He's a drug addict and he abuses like the drugs that he has in his own store, and that leads him to bankruptcy and financial ruin. So they flee Scotland and come to America on a ship captained by Captain Darling. On the way over to America, Isabel and Captain become close and she saves his life with her stitches because Isabel is a very talented seamstress, dressmaker, tailor, all of the things. She also has an interesting personal backstory. Her ancestress was a convicted witch, and though she escaped, it's been something that's really colored Isabel's life and the life of her maternal ancestors. And Isabel herself thinks that she might have some of that enchanted witchiness in her. She sees colors. It's a thing called synesthesia, which the author describes as at the start of the book as associating sounds or words or people with different colors. And apparently this is something that's a lot of people have, and it's not that crazy, but I guess if you don't have it, it sounds sort of interesting. So apparently Billie Eilish has it, and Isabel had it as well, and she wasn't sure if this made her a witch. She was told to keep her colors to herself, but as she gets older and older, she can't help but express her colors in the things that she does. So her and her husband come over to Salem, where her husband quickly goes back on the ship and starts trading, but not really, and he's like a fuck up. But Isabel is in Salem planting roots. She has a cottage. She sees like a cute man's named Nathaniel Hawthorne. He's a writer. He's like brooding, moody. And she's never known love before. She married an older man and not for love, but just because she thought it was, you know, the safe choice. And obviously it turned out that it wasn't. So her and Nathaniel spark a romance that at times you really think is like OTP, really sweet. Until they're a few weeks into it. He only comes around at night. He won't recognize her in the streets. And he also was really like, not excited for her husband to come back, but like ready for him to come back because that will mean that she has to go back to her man's and Isabel won't be with him. He's not looking for anything serious with Isabel. He has a few, you know, moral convictions that are kind of immoral and red flags start to pop up along the way. At the same time, Isabel finds out that she's pregnant, but she doesn't have her husband. Nathaniel will not stand by her side. And so she has to carry this child and this burden alone. Her husband comes back to town and once more tries to fuck her over. But she escapes with the help of her wonderful neighbor, Mercy. And from there, she goes back with Captain Darling to Halifax, Nova Scotia, and lives happily ever after, really. And then like a million years later, her and Captain Darling finally get together, even though he's the only man of honor in the whole book. And she could have married him like on the journey over to America in the first place. So this story kind of fills in the holes of how Nat Hawthorne might have been inspired to write The Scarlet Letter about a woman named Hester. And that would make Hester Isabel Gowdy. Hester's daughter, Pearl, would be Isabel's eventual daughter, Margaret. And Nat himself would be the priest Arthur who has an affair.
I need you to say that all again because I understood everything in the book besides everything that was italicized. Okay.
Besides what?
Those were the past flashbacks of her ancestor. Yeah,
everything italicized.
Oh, yeah. They flash back a few times to her ancestors and his ancestors. I was waiting for some deeper meaning, but it wasn't that. No, Snitch. So the premise of this book, you've heard of The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne.
Yeah, Easy A with Emma Stone.
Easy A, exactly. It was written in the 1600s. It's like one of the most famous pieces of American literature. And it's about a woman who has an extramarital affair and a child results from it. And she has to walk around with an A. So it was written by Nat Hawthorne, who wrote a lot of other books. And all the other books were based on truths in his life. So the author of Hester was like, well, then Scarlet Letter is probably based on a truth in Nathaniel's life. I'm going to write what I think happened to inspire Nathaniel Hawthorne to write that book.
Got it. So.
So in this Isabel book, Isabel is Hester.
Is the Scarlet Letter.
Yes. And in his book, you know, she stays in Salem and has her kid there and just lives a life of shame. But in perhaps his real life, she took her daughter away and it was a different outcome, but perhaps in Scarlet Letter, like the woman is a seamstress. There's a lot of similarities
that I read that in like the acknowledgments. There was a lot of things going on that I didn't understand,
so it's like a little bit of historical fan fiction. What do you think about that, counselor?
I think that makes sense.
That feels right.
That feels right.
Okay, so I hope I explained the book as best as possible. Honestly,
you crushed that.
I mean, we'll see what we say at the end of this episode, but you could also just read it. Like, it was an enjoyable read. So let's talk about if we liked it or not before we get into all the questions. Bex, let's start with you, as this was a Becky's choice.
Great. Well, I thought this was the perfect book for fall weather and spooky season, so I loved that. And ultimately, I thought this book was excellent. I really appreciated the concept of historical fiction featuring real life characters. I also really admired Isabel as this very strong, skilled, and spirited heroine. And I feel like it easily could have been a story mainly about Nathaniel Hawthorne, but I loved that it was a powerful female immigrant who was the core focus. And I also just liked the specific era details, like the 19th century fashion trends and commerce and medicine. And then I loved hearing about her embroidery, and she was just so skilled. And then the colors and the visions really allowed her art to come to life for me as a reader. So I just like thought all of those details combined made it like a really fascinating, different read. the topic of witchcraft coinciding with the synesthesia, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Phenomenon was really clever, I thought, because obviously like witchcraft was such a topic back then and she had these visions, which we now understand better. But like at the time, like that was – she really did feel like there was something witchy about her. So I thought that was really well done. The flashbacks and the ancestral vignettes were a little disruptive for me and just interrupted the story's momentum at times, but I did understand their value, and I think it's crazy that like those flashbacks are rooted in our country's actual history and like these trials really did happen. So honestly, it was a book that I thought about when I wasn't reading it, and I really like couldn't put it down, and it also stayed with me now that I finished it, which I feel like is a sign of a great book. So I felt really, yes, really good about this read.
Great. Okay. That is so wonderful to start off with. Dana, what did you think?
I was so confused how I felt about this book because like part of me reading it, I was so like, I was a little bored and I couldn't not for the life of me remember the characters. Like I was really struggling to be like, who's Charlotte? Who's Abigail? Who's Nell? Who's this? Like it just was not sticking for some reason in my head. I think I was like having ADD reading it or something. But then at the same time, I really enjoyed picking it back up. I had a dream about it. It stuck with me. It was kind of a comforting read. Like I liked getting enveloped in that world. And it's not something I think I'd ever read on my own, although I did love The Scarlet Letter and that brought back flashbacks for me. Like every SAT essay I ever wrote was like about shame versus guilt in The Scarlet Letter. So that evoked some sentimentality. But overall, I am more positive than negative over this book. I just struggled to like really delve in each character and remember who was who for some reason.
Interesting. That's so not like you.
I know. I just
wait, I couldn't agree more. Like at one point I was like, who the fuck is Isabel?
Yeah.
Like I don't know why only everyone's name was Isabel or Margaret.
Yeah, that was the point. They were like,
I know, but even still I was like, who the fuck's Isabel? I enjoyed the book. Huh? I wouldn't say that I just don't know that I was the audience for it because I literally didn't even know that there was like so many connections and stuff until like about 5 minutes ago. So I feel like it's really unfair for me to judge it. But at the end of the day, what I will say is that I'm just like not a huge historical fiction girly. So like I was at a disadvantage. Rit was at a disadvantage of me liking this, like, you know, but what I will say is that I can definitely appreciate it, that it was very well written. And yeah, for that, that's where a lot of my rating will be coming from.
I agree with Snitch. Like, this is not a book I would have chosen for myself. I feel like if it wasn't a Redheads book, I might have even, like, given up at 10% and just been like, no, I just because, like,
I'm
it's just
shocked.
Not what I wanted.
I'm shocked.
It's just not what I wanted to be reading. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was really good. I totally agree. It was so well written. Once I finished the book, I read the author's note and then I looked a little bit more into Nat Hawthorne and the stories in his life. Like, I loved the idea of what she did. It kind of reminds me of like Inglourious Basterds a little bit, where it's like, you know, fantasy historical fiction. I think it's a really cool idea and it makes a lot of sense. Like, all his other books were true. Where's the lie, you know? So I thought that was awesome. Also, I liked a lot of parts of the book reminded me of the show Outlander, even though I didn't like the show Outlander and I didn't finish it. I felt like I was able to set the scene for like all those Scotland scenes and the fairies and like the whole thing about like witchcraft in Scotland is a very big thing in Outlander, especially season one, and especially the witch trials. So that was pretty cool. And then, yes, Salem. I've never been to Salem in my mind or in a book. And so it was cool to see what goes on there. I also, the Salem witch trials, I'm not read up on at all, but the concept really fascinates me. Like the fact that so many people could just believe such a lie and this like herd mentality that is based on, like, it's a joke, like witches, you know, and they're literally burning people at the stake, like, because nobody wants to like think other than the narrative,
the way so, that I wish witches were real, you know, right. Like I wouldn't burn them, I would like put them on a pedestal.
No, yeah, like put them to work.
Yeah,
they, like I want this happen. Wish and that wish.
Yeah, they just were so one-track minded, you know? They weren't thinking a bigger picture.
It's literally so crazy to think about, like, how people can get so carried away in a zeitgeist that they're burning women and children over witchcraft, which, like, we know is not a thing.
Totally.
And these are, like, religious people. It's just, it's wild. So that always fascinates me. So it was cool to read a book about that. I read it literally on Halloween weekend. Couldn't have been more perfect. I feel like I never read a spooky book. So I'm glad that I read it and it was well written. And I thought it was really well done. There's nothing I really would have asked for to be different.
I agree with you conceptually. I love that kind of like prequel idea, like Wicked to Wizard of Oz. Just like what happened beforehand.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Today's episode of The Redheads is brought to you by Bookfinity's Moody Awards. It's that time of year again, time to pick your favorite books you've read this year, so be sure to check out Bookfinity's second annual Moody Awards. The Moodies are not like other book awards. They're cool book awards. Rather than vote for your favorite books by genre, with the Moodies, you get to vote for your most loved books by how you actually read, how they made you feel. This year's categories include empowered, inspired, happy, scared, informed, and amused. Go to bookfinity.com/vote to check out all of the 2022 nominations, including Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus, The It Girl by Ruth Ware, Black Cake by Charmaine Wilkerson, and so many more. Voting starts today through December 5th. Check back on December 9th for the Moody Award winners announcement. And while you're there, don't forget to check out the rest of the site. You can get personalized book recommendations from Bookfinity by taking a quick 5-minute quiz to discover your reader type. And you can also track books you've read and want to read with custom book lists. I loved finding out my reader type from Bookfinity. I personally am a time traveler. We've covered what all the other redheads are. I know Becky is a heroin addict. Snitch is obviously a romantic. So check out your reader type at Bookfinity and cast your vote for your most loved books at www.bookfinity.com/vote. That's bookfinity.com/vote to vote today.
Okay, so let's get into the DBQs. I found a wonderful book club guide that really...
I'm so happy for you.
The questions get to the heart of the matter, I think. So our first question, at the beginning of the novel, we are told about the unique phenomenon of synesthesia, which plays a major role in Hester. In what ways does Isabel synesthesia, I don't fucking know, serve to propel the narrative forward?
I feel like it's like the entirety of the narrative. It really colors her like personality and interactions with people. Like her relationship with Mercy is really influenced by these colors and seeing the words embroidered within Mercy's shawl. It has like influenced her relationship with her mother, her father, Edward, Nat. Like I feel like it's like the entirety of like her being and the relationships like are like really worked around this disorder phenomenon, however you vision it.
Yeah, but I also feel like most of the time the colors like didn't lead her astray. You know, if she saw something as a certain color, like it had a certain meaning, and most of the time that was true. Obviously with Nat it wasn't, or maybe what he was saying at the time he meant, but then later didn't mean it. And I also feel like they changed, like, with her age and her wisdom, she started to see, truly, like, see things differently, and thus the colors would change as well, just like they went away when she was grieving. Like, I feel like they were perfect, like, markers of, like, where she was at mentally.
I totally agree.
It's also interesting how, like, the advent of science informs our previous misconceptions that we dubbed magic and witchcraft. Like, now there's a term for what she was seeing, but back then they just dubbed it as sorcery. When, like, similar with schizophrenia, it's like, oh my gosh, this person has supernatural powers. Oh no, actually, this is a mental illness. Like, there are ways to describe it scientifically that back then was just not part of the vocabulary.
That is so true. Okay, early in the novel on page 5, Isabel's auntie Eileen says, quote, to clothe a woman is to hide her failings and frailties. Throughout the novel, Isabel helps to clothe many women, including herself. Does Isabel take the same view toward clothing as her aunt, or is her approach more nuanced? I feel like it's a similar approach, but instead of like hiding someone's quirks or frailties, like Isabel's actually accentuating them in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on the situation, but I feel like it probably accomplishes the same goal of like distraction, but I don't feel like Isabel was ever trying to like hide what other people were doing, but more so like work with it.
Yeah. Like Charlotte's pregnancy, she was definitely tasked with creating a dress that hid it, but
she just created a beautiful dress that like happens to hide it, as opposed to just like some sack.
And like her own cape, like she was stitched all the stuff that was not hiding her past, despite like how shameful it was.
Right.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, so funny. Stitching the story, it's like definitely not hiding any failings. She's like really like honestly promoting and memorializing a part of history that maybe she should have felt more bashful about.
Yeah.
Honestly, the cape kept bothering me because it was causing so many problems. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it was also the best way to show off her work. So she was like a walking billboard.
But I guess totally. But like she could have made a billboard of like fake things.
That's true. But she's not a fake girl. She couldn't fake it counts.
I guess.
I just like wonder like how filthy it was.
Totally.
The cape. Oh, for sure. You know what I couldn't give two shits about?
What?
The Adam and Eve shawl.
Same.
Like, Oh my God, yeah.
When she was doing it and kept coming back to it, I was like, is this meant to be good? Like, I feel like if anybody sees it, they're going to think that, like, you're wicked with, like, the, you know what I mean? Like, I was just like, I don't care, and it's not going to solve your problems.
This was supposed to be this climax of, like, at this ball with this Adam and Eve, I will be noticed and my life would change. And then it was like, wait, are you even going to the ball? Like, is he even helping you anymore? Like, no, fell by the wayside.
No, and then she went to the ball, and they were sequestered. Like, she wasn't even in the same room as the people who would be coming to her for dresses. And it's like, did she not know that that was going to be the case? Because she wore, like, a fabulous dress to the ball and then didn't do anything about it.
100%. That was a flop for me.
Plot hole, yes.
The ball was a flop, and I knew when they were, like, talking about it throughout the whole book, I'm like, this is where it's going to all come to a head, like, you know, the fall ball. And it's like, yawn, this isn't a Hallmark movie. Like, who cares?
They literally were in there for 5 minutes, like, went through the side entrance, and then, like, dipped.
And I was like, oh, maybe Nat will, like, bring a girl, and that will be the drama. It's like, no, he brought a sister. Like, nothing happened.
Yeah.
He was such a waif.
He was literally a waste of space.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you feel that way from the beginning, or were you enchanted by him?
I wouldn't say I was enchanted.
Were you in love with him, counselor?
No, I was definitely intrigued because I liked that he was like nice to her. But I don't know. Like he was kind of weird to me.
He was weird. And he really started to bother me. And I think for Isabel too, when he was like, at first he was like, you know, it's like you were a figment of my imagination and now you're here, which is like sweet. And then eventually it's like I dreamt you up, and it's like, no, I'm a real fucking person who's been through shit. And like, she was like, he would look at me and just see himself. And it's like, go away.
Yes. I'm honestly so impressed that she was able to come to that conclusion, because like, honestly, I was sort of enchanted by him. Like when he was saying that stuff to her, I was like, this is so romantic. And then she's like, pardon me, I'm real and you're selfish. And I was like, oh, actually, she's right.
And I loved
him. He was like a narcissist.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And when they were like, is witchcraft a thing? And then when he was gaslighting her, like, you enchanted me to come to you. And then she's like, I thought you dreamt me up. Like, which one is it, buddy?
Yeah, totally. He was giving Steven from Tell Me Lies.
100%.
Okay, next question. Examine the various positions and choices that women in the novel are given and have to overcome. What journey did each of these women take, and who do you think ultimately overcame the most?
Probably Mercy.
Yeah, maybe? I think Mercy too, because I think she was up against the most and like, you know, sneaking people from like slave states to be free, I think was the biggest risk any of the characters were taking. And especially compared to like what Isabel was going through, which when we were reading Isabel's narrative, I'm like, oh my God, how is she going to do it? Like, this is so hard. And then you read Mercy's story, or the story of the kids that she was living with and their uncle and Zeke. And it's like, oh, they're going through the most, and the way that she's dealt with it, and like the ingenuity that she's had, and also like the strength of spirit to like do all of this and keep doing it, even though it's so dangerous. I'm like, queen.
Yes. And yeah. like the flashback chapters in the italics snitch with all those women in the past who were getting killed, like they too
went through. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah. I forgot about that part.
Yeah. On page 190, Isabel tells Nat, quote, "Women want to read love stories to know if a man is good, if love is true, who and what can be trusted. Discuss the different men in Isabel's life. In what ways is the truth of this statement revealed through Hester?"
In the words of Amy Schumer, "You do not want to marry the best sex you've ever had guy. That guy is in jail." And I think that sums up Nat.
I think that's what the author was trying to get across.
Totally.
But yeah,
yeah, I also just wasn't really expecting Edward to be such a piece of shit, you know?
Yes, yeah. Like they alluded to that in the start, like when she was betrothed to him, she was like, and then it was going to take a turn and I just didn't realize. But he really was a piece of shit. Like,
yeah, like everything. I didn't think he was going to try and kill her. Like, I just thought he wasn't going to like love her.
Right. And I thought when he faced like ruin, that was when he was shitty. You know, like that was the hard part was over. Or even when he like left her and he got off in the ship.
Barbados.
I forget where. Yeah, and he didn't come back on. I was like, okay, so that's the end of Edward's story and how he. Yeah. But no, it just like kept. No,
he's like a cockroach. She like would not die.
Yeah,
yeah. I like. But that. I also feel like between Edward and Nat, like Isabel had really two very different experiences with quote unquote love. Like the first time she went for like the sensible choice, and like still that never turned into love. And then with Nat, she went for like you know the passionate choice, and still that wasn't love at the end of the day. So I feel like. It showed like a good range of like relationships and how they can be misleading in different ways.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah.
I like there was a line where she was referencing her scar from their first meeting and she was like, this is the only thing left from that meeting. And I just thought that was poignant of like there was nothing left from the love that we shared that one time when he took care of my wound.
That's good. I missed that.
Same.
But...
Danny, you made it up.
You made it up. Discuss the significance of Isabel's colors. What do you think it means that she has lost them at certain points in her life and gained them back? Why do you think she is unable to see colors with certain people?
That I feel like last it's the same part, as oh, sorry.
The last part of the question, I don't know.
Yes, is a good question. I feel like we already talked about the first part, but like I don't know why, like with the widow, she wasn't able to see colors.
I just feel like there's some people like how Edward in Twilight like couldn't read Bella, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's just some people who are like just don't like you just can't read in specific for specific or no rhyme or reason. So I feel like that's just what we have to accept here.
Yeah.
No, but I feel like the author wants us to take something from it, but I don't know what it is.
Who couldn't she see? Just the widow or was there someone else?
There was three people whose colors were the same to her, including the widow. And I think it was like all good people.
The widow, Mrs. Silas.
Oh yeah, Mrs. Silas.
And
yeah.
Maybe another. And maybe it was all the fact that they like had like connection through witchery.
That's
like,
what I was going to say.
Mrs. Silas had the familial roots back in like the Salem trials, and then the widow, like her sister, had some witchcraft roots, so maybe that was the nod.
That was my thought. And like the widow could see her. She was like, oh, I know you're obsessed with Nat. Like she saw through her, so it was almost like their ancestral witchery overpowered hers. But it's not a great explanation, but I agree with it. It was like some connection with their witchery.
Oh, I don't think, I feel like it's like, I don't know who the third person was, but I feel like Mrs. Silas, for whatever reason, and obviously the widow, like, I feel like they have so many walls built up that like, you know, I don't know what Mrs. Silas had been through, but obviously like the widow, she wasn't going to let anything on by the way that she spoke. And so maybe for Isabel would be colors, but for other people, you get like an impression from someone, you get like a vibe. And I feel like for her, like she's speaking plainly because she's like been so burned in the past.
Oh, I like that. Like impenetrable. She can't see through all the layers to get to the colors.
Yeah. That's what I feel.
I like that. And also for like why it went away for some period of time. I feel like that was getting at just grief. Like grief muted all of her colors when her mom died. And it wasn't until they shook her out of her reverie and brought her to a new world that like she could reopen that door.
Yes. And I feel like the colors mostly. It was how she saw people, how she sees the world. And, you know, if I had colors, I probably would see other people's sayings differently than the colors that she saw. So I feel like grief was just like the world was gray.
Yes.
And so that's all she saw. It wasn't people had changed or she lost her powers. It's just like the lens.
Yes.
Like gray colored glasses.
Totally.
Okay. Next question. On page 252, Isabel asks herself whether Nat is a cruel man or a weak man. By the end of the novel, what is your opinion on Nat's cruelty or weakness? Is it possible for someone to be both?
I think he's weak. I think he's an impressionable, weak man. Yeah. And like thought he was someone like strong and like innovative, but really he was just impressionable and a child.
Because at the end, he does kind of try to offer to help her and like send her away to a house where she could be pregnant without the shame of the public. But yeah, I would have to say.
But that was his weak, like, yes, agreed, because he's not cruel. He wanted to help her, but he was still acting incredibly weak.
Yeah, no, that was an argument for weak over cruel. Like a cruel person wouldn't want to. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I would say he was cruel or like evil, but he was just like a poussée.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at a certain point, like your weakness
is cruel.
Is cruelty.
It was like a toxic relationship. Like when they were, when he was teaching her how to swim, and then she gingerly brought up, like, I'd like to go to Maine with you one day, maybe. And he just was silent and like was not budging whatsoever on telling her what she wanted to hear. I was like, oh, he's not into her.
You know, it's all downhill from that day at the cove.
Yes.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Also, I feel like his weakness versus cruelty again, like, showed up even in his position on slavery, where it's like he was pretty much saying, like, yeah, slavery is bad, but, you know, it's not our problem.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's an incredibly weak position that veers into cruel.
Yes. I mean, 1,000%. I also felt like that, his opinion there, like, kind of felt out of character.
It was the first thing that he did where it was like there was no mincing words. I feel like for some of the other stuff, like you could interpret whatever he was saying as like genuine love. But then that was a turning point.
That's a good point.
You know, because even when he was saying like, I see, you know, you are like a figment of my dreams. Like even though that's not what she wanted to hear, like someone could interpret that to be like, oh, you love me so.
Romantic.
Like literally girl. Me. That's how I interpreted it.
Yeah. No, but I really felt what she was saying after a certain point. It's like, no, that was cute at first, but like that just, that negates everything she's ever been through because she's just like, it exists for him.
Yes.
Totally.
Yeah. Okay, next question. Hester is a novel that imagines the inspiration for Hester Prynne, the heroine of The Scarlet Letter. If you have read The Scarlet Letter, Dana, does Isabel's story resemble how you might have imagined this woman's life?
It's just like my memory of The Scarlet Letter was so focused on shame versus guilt. She wears an A because she has a public secret, but like other characters in the book hid their secret. So they had guilt, not the public shame. And like, at least that's my personal takeaway from The Scarlet Letter. And this book, I think, dealt a lot less with other people's guilt versus her open shame. So it was obviously the same story. Like there were parallels and I could envision how the characters led similar lives, but I wasn't reading it with all these deja vu moments of like, oh my gosh, this is exactly how I pictured it.
Oh, cool. Yeah. You know what? I actually kind of liked that I didn't really know the details of The Scarlet Letter because I wasn't so caught up in like, oh, Hester would do this or Hester would never do that. So that was kind of nice. And I also feel like my only reference of The Scarlet Letter is that movie Easy A.
Yeah.
And I just kept thinking about Emma Stone's character. I was like, was her name Hester? Was it Isabel? Like, that's really what I was referencing.
That's so funny.
I want to read it. It's good.
You should. Is it long?
It can't be that long if I read it for like,
you definitely read it for like AP Lit.
No, it was like, well, I guess if I wrote about it on the SATs, it must have been high school, but I don't think it was that long. You could definitely read it.
222 pages.
Yeah.
I could fuck with a 222.
Do it, Bex, and report back next month.
Okay. Guys, putting a lot of faith in the in-between reads.
Okay, next question. Scott is... Scottish myths and elements of the magical world run throughout the novel. How does Isabel's belief in magic and the spirit world change throughout the novel? What do you believe is real or possible?
That's a great question.
That's a great question.
I do feel
also
like
because I don't think we even read about any actual magic that occurred.
Well, yes, Isabel ancestress, like when she was torn down, like when she escaped the witch trials and she was like by the banks of the river, like dying, the fairies nursed her back to life in the fairy world. I think they took her baby that she was pregnant with at the time. And then she went back to the world of men and lived a very nice life and had a lot of more babies.
But to your point, Snitch, I kind of liked how it wasn't so obvious in the normal plot about the magic because you were left to your own interpretation of like, wait, is this sorcery or is this just like the power of women coming together? Did she actually evoke someone to come help her when her leg was tied to the table when Edward held her captive?
Right.
Or like, did she just have good karma and someone on the walk was able to stop and run to her? Like, you were constantly doubting whether it was witchcraft or whether like she was just a powerful woman because she believed in herself. So like I kind of like that dichotomy.
Yeah, but with Isabel, I never thought anything was witchcraft. Even when she was like willing someone to answer the door, I didn't think that she willed it. I think we found out that Mercy told the undertaker's wife. But I do feel like there's something about folklore and things in the past that it's easy to more romanticize like a spiritual or magical element. So with Isabel the ancestress, it's like, oh, she wasn't doing well and the fairies brought her back. And that's just sort of like the lore.
The lore. I've never heard the word folklore used, not in reference to the Taylor Swift album.
Oh, no, like the story of Isabel Gowdy in the 1600s is like folklore. You know, she was by the banks of the river and the fairies saved her. They took her baby and then she went back to the world of men.
Yeah, that's folklore for sure, if I had to guess.
For sure. Okay, consider Isabel Gowdy and her legacy as well as the legacy of other women in Isabel's family, including her daughter. Which of the women in the family do you think were the most influential? What do you think Isabel and Margaret's legacy will be?
Isabel Gowdy is our Isabel, or is that her?
They both are, but this question is about our Isabel.
Got it. I think the other Isabel, incredibly influential. I think that Isabel and Margaret's legacy will be like strong, independent women who can like make it without the help and assistance of other like men mostly.
Yeah, and like for the first time in their family lineage, they're going to have an open and honest conversation about their powers. Like the novel kind of ended with like, okay, I'm going to now tell her about Nat and everything that comes along with it. Whereas Isabel's own mom silenced her when it came to her colors. So that was kind of a deviation that was like a welcoming next generation thing.
Yeah, I feel like Isabel Gowdy Sr., we'll call her, was like kind of a North Star for all the women in the family because she was one, like a cautionary tale, but also an inspirational tale. And all the women that came after her sort of lived in the shadow of everything that she went through. And I feel like the women like Isabel Gowdy Jr. and her mother, Margaret, and like their legacy is that they're amazing women and amazing mothers and like just matriarchs. And I think even the fact that they're all named after each other just like goes to show that. But I do think that with Isabel and now Margaret Jr., it will change a little bit to be like more open and even more modern. I feel like that's the effect of going to the new world and they're embracing modernity and like being more modern women while still taking with them like everything that their ancestors have instilled in them.
Totally. Even Margaret Jr.'s job, like she's like really passionate. I can't remember if she's like an activist or like a scholar, but I think
she's
like
a teacher.
I thought she was a writer.
She likes to write, but I thought she was a teacher. I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I can't remember. She was in that world.
But she was something literary.
Yes, something scholarly.
Something scholarly, education forward, that wouldn't have been possible.
Education. Yes.
So I feel like it, and it still probably was a little less common, just like kind of pointing to like her pioneer energy.
Agreed.
Yes. And yeah. I feel like throughout history, like especially with a lot of people who have emigrated to the US, like the person, whether it's in the 1600s, 1700s, 18, like the person who goes from the old world to the new, like they're the ones who have to bend. And like, I think a lot of ways they bring with them what they came from, but they are the ones who have to change the most to like assimilate, for lack of a better term, to the new world. And then their children are the ones who get to enjoy all the benefits of that.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
I don't think that Margaret Jr. like really faced any hardships in her life.
I mean, not finding like, out that not- your mom is in a book and that that's your dad and everything you okay, got compared was a lie.
Hardship that her mother went through, like that's nothing.
Fair. I do agree. Yeah. Okay, next question. Final question. On page 313, Isabel says, quote, like Nat himself, the book was a truth within a lie and a lie within a truth. Consider Nat's personal journey and his relationship with Isabel. In what ways is this statement true?
It was ironic how Nat was simultaneously denouncing running from his family, wanting to be anything but them, but then would not leave Salem with Isabel because he couldn't leave behind his roots and needed to find a way to reconcile it, etc. It's like, do you want to be totally different from them and start anew elsewhere? Or do you like constantly feel this intertwinement with them whereby like you need to resolve it?
Yeah. And also like the fact that he was so resentful of his lineage and, you know, everything that came along with it. But at the end of the day, like was like, my name is all I have.
Yes.
Is like, bro, but you hate it.
No, he's so hypocritical.
So what do you have?
Agreed. It was like just a cop out. He just wanted to be miserable. And that was a good reason for him to be. But like, yo, you are not your ancestors. Like if you want to be a good person, you don't need to be weighed down by this curse and like self-inflict harm on your back shoulder with crosshatches every night.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
We trash. Have one more question, actually. How did the end of the novel make you feel? What do you think comes next for Isabel and Margaret in their relationship and their story? I just want to say I loved the end of the novel because it was really a happily ever after. I just was frustrated that Isabel and Captain Darling like missed so many years where they could have been together. They didn't get together for like 20 years after they moved. And that was frustrating to me. And even when she was on the ship leaving Salem and like she knew that Captain Darling, he wanted to marry her and she was like, no, I feel like, you know, for the narrative, the author had to do that to show that like Isabel could be on her own. But it was like she finally found the right man. So like, why can't she just do it with him?
Yeah,
totally. You know? But I think she was residually burned from the fact that like the only two men she ever encountered in her life turned out to be actual trash bags of trash filled trash.
Of course, but like she's known Captain Darling for like a year now. He's always done right by her. He paid all the debts. Like he put in the work. Yeah. And it was just a little frustrating, but I understand why it had to be done. And it's true. Like Isabel did need to stand on her own two feet, but it was just like 20 years of missed time.
Maybe what's next for Margaret Jr. is she wants to go find Nat and they get involved in the shit show again.
Yeah. That would be so frustrating if I were Isabel.
Yeah.
If like, you know what I mean? Like, that's probably the most annoying part of even telling her daughter.
That constant urge to be like, wait, can I meet him?
No, it's like, no.
Yeah, scram.
Scram.
Okay, next up we have the redhead questions. I actually only got one redhead question about this book. I guess everyone else had like the easiest time processing it. So first and only question. I am a high school English teacher, so I was wondering if you all had to read The Scarlet Letter in school. If you did, what were your thoughts about it? Have your thoughts changed after reading Hester?
Yes, I read it in school. I loved it. It clearly didn't make that much of a memory impact on me because, as we discussed, I was not comparing Isabel to Hester the entire time. But I think the book is just so impactful in general on society. Like, Easy A made a killer movie about it. It's an extremely household name. Everybody's heard of The Scarlet Letter. So I'm kind of happy it got brought back into the forefront of our memories because, you know, it was time.
And like, there are certain books that I wish I read, like just the classics, like Jane Eyre and the Green Gables one that Jackie loves so much.
Anne of Green Gables.
Anne of Green Gables. And so I appreciate this book because I think it will inspire me to read The Scarlet Letter, and otherwise I most likely would not have found a reason to pick it up. So I like this kind of resurgence taking place.
And one thing I want to add that I liked about this book, and this is how I felt about The Kitchen Front, it's they kind of like leaned into the societal expectations of women in sewing. And it wasn't such like, I don't always need a code name Helene where they're jumping out of planes and doing the manly thing and like going against what normal women in their time are doing. Like, I liked how her passion was her needlepoint and she owned it. And it was not looked down upon that like, oh, just a housewife who's sewing. It's like, no, she loved that. And that was the time. And there's
and she was so good at it.
So good at it.
I just like wanted to
same. I couldn't really visualize it.
I know.
Yeah. I'm having a hard time visualizing it too. Snitch.
That's why it's best if it's in your imagination, you know, because then it could be like amazing.
Definitely.
But honestly, and I feel magical, like what she did was better than what my imagination could come up with, because I don't really know how to imagine. Like, I can't imagine the coat. Cape.
Oh, I can. I just feel like it was like a tapestry of things. You have to remember, like, there were no pictures. So it's just like creating things that look like what they look like in real life is a huge skill.
She's so skilled. I'm the one who's not skilled because I can't imagine it.
No, but I feel like you don't have to. It's not even anything crazy. It's just like, you know, a ship and the nature, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah, fine. That's fair.
Colors.
Okay, let's get into the moral of the story. What do we think it is? Dana, I'll start with you.
Nothing so deep. I just had believe in yourself. I feel like that was the thing that propelled her through the whole story, believing in her needlepoint, believing in herself. Without that, she had nothing.
Yeah. Bex?
I feel that, D. I had strength and perseverance will lead the way.
That's beautiful, Becky.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. Snitch?
Mine was, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Ain't that the truth?
I feel that. Jax?
I always, like, just choose whichever one you guys said that I agree with most. And I think it's believe in yourself, you know, like.
You mean strength and perseverance will lead the way didn't resonate with you? You're not getting that tattooed?
It was a really close second, but I feel like that's what Isabel needed to do. She needed to trust herself, trust her colors. Like, you know, you're perfect just the way you are. And all of these things that make you different are what make you special. So lean into that.
Love that.
You're not getting that tattoo.
I'm shocked.
Okay, now it's time for the Hollywood treatment, everyone's favorite segment. I mean, who knows if this would ever be made into a movie. I actually think it would be a very nice looking movie with like people speaking and like the color, their words being colors. Like I could see it. I don't know if it'll happen. But in case it does, let's give our casting suggestions. Who did you have for Isabel, Bex?
Jackie Ashray.
Oh my God.
I'm just kidding. I mean, like, obviously you're the star. And I also had Sadie Sink as your backup.
That's a really good one. Dana?
That's a really good one.
Madeline Pesch.
Really good.
Thank you.
Snatchler?
Sophia LaCourte. I'm kidding. I'm going to go with Sadie Sink. That was a great one.
That was a really good one. I had Eleanor Tomlinson, who played Demelza in Poldark. So she's a British girly. She would have – if you Google a picture of her, like, she is Isabel. Google her. What's her name? Eleanor Tomlinson. Poldark.
Eleanor.
So you don't see like her red carpet pictures. You see her in like a period piece. Let me know what you think.
Oh, yeah, that's her.
Oh, yeah, that's her.
Now I need to Google it and see what you guys are.
Sar?
Wow, Counselor Snitch. Yeah, that's her. That's our girl.
That's our girl.
That's our girly.
Okay, who did you have for Nat? Becky?
Ansel Elgort, because he's also a weak man.
Damn. It's actually pretty good.
I have Dana. Robert Pattinson.
Okay. Not the craziest thing. Yes. Snitch.
Okay, like mine, you're going to just not like, and it doesn't align with his age or anything, but like literally the entire time, the only person that I could imagine was the creepy guy from House of the Dragon who watches Allison's feet.
Laris.
In order to give her tea. Yeah.
No,
I saw like a creepy guy. I just got creepy vibes. Like that was my vibe from him.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I had Dylan O'Brien. Dylan. Who I feel like
he's too young.
No, he's 31. I looked it up because I don't know why that was. I never like think about Dylan O'Brien, but I was like, that's the vibe I'm getting. Just like brooding, handsome.
Yeah, I could see that. I just don't know. What is he in?
He was in, I know.
The All Too Well 10-minute version.
Oh, yeah. Sadie Sink and Dylan O'Brien. Oh, my God. Yeah, he was in All Too Well 10-minute version. Thank you, Counts.
You're welcome.
Okay, now it is time to rate this book and bring our discussion to a close. So, Rebecca, what did you rate Hester?
I gave this book a 4.6 rating. I love it.
Wow.
Wow, she went there.
Dana?
I gave it a 3.3.
Dina, what?
Wow.
Oh, that's high for me.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Satchler?
3.5 for me.
Okay.
Wow. Match. And I'm giving it a 3.8.
Okay.
So our overall Redheads rating for Hester by Lori Lico Albanese is a 3.8.
Feels right.
Feels low.
Feels right. No, that feels right. Like it's almost a 4, but for some reason it isn't. Also, it was weird to me. Obviously, now I know why it was called Hester, but if you just read the book and like didn't read any of the other stuff, it's like, the fuck is Hester?
No, 1,000%.
That's so funny. I liked the title, and I listened to the toast today, and you guys were – or yesterday's episode, and you were talking about Spare, and I really like that name for a book. So I think – I don't know. I just like a punchy one word.
No, the title is great, like, given the context. I'm just saying, like, if you only picked up the book, you would be like the
– If you had no idea what the Scarlet Letter was.
You would say, what?
What? Yeah.
Okay, now it's time for the other books that we read this month. Snitch, let's start with you.
Okay. I reread It Ends With Us by Colleen Hoover just because the sequel came out and I had read it like 6 years ago in college and I literally did not remember the plot. So I just, you know, read it again and it was good. It was never my favorite book. Then I read It Starts With Us, which was the sequel. And it was so bad. Like, I'm sorry. It was not good. Like, I'll be the one to say it. And then I read The Friend Zone.
Claudia
and the sequel to The Friend Zone. Yeah, she told me to. It's by Abby Jimenez. And it was so good. Loved it. Classic, you know, my type of vibe. I'm supposed to give ratings. I forgot. I don't really do this part this often. It Starts With Us, I'll give like a 2.5. The Friend Zone, I'll give a 4. And the sequel, I'll give a 4. And then I read I'm in the Middle of Forever Never by Lucy Spohr. So I'll keep you all posted on that.
Wow, big month for Snitch.
Yeah.
Not really. I feel like I've been doing better. Like, that was only 3.
I feel like there were so many months where you didn't read one other book, though. What do you think it is that makes you read?
Honestly, I think it's Halp Reads. She, like, makes me read because she's always reading, so I have nothing else to do.
I love that for you guys. Bex, you read anything?
I didn't read anything, you guys.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
We're coming into, like, real reading season. I feel like in November and December, like, between the four of us, we read, like, 20 books.
Yeah. I need, like, really amazing recommendations. But honestly, I kind of want to read The Scarlet Letter, so.
Put it on your list. I feel like I have so many on my want to read. Like, I need to get to all of them. But I'll share what I read this month. I read 3 books. I read The Club by Ellery Lloyd. I really liked it. It was, like, kind of not thriller, but just like murder mystery, fabulous people, fabulous setting. It's like a private members only club for like A-list celebrities off in an island somewhere. And like a bunch of people die. And so it's like going through the weekend, the events of the weekend and like who died, how did they die, etc. It was pretty good. I gave it a 4 and I enjoyed it. If you're looking for like people always ask me for a rec of just like rich murder vibes, that's perfect for you. Then I read Tomorrow, Tomorrow, and Tomorrow by Gabrielle Zevin.
Oh, my God.
Because Dana highly recommended it, and it really is, like, the book of the moment right now. And I talked about this a little bit on the toast. I can recognize that this was a good book, but it filled me with such dread. Like, I can't remember the last time reading a book feeling this way. Like, it was positively dreadful. Like, it was – the characters were just so dreadful, and the plot just, like, kept getting worse. And I didn't know where it was. And it was like things were going so well for them, like externally. But like the people were just like miserable and like growing apart. And it was just like filled me with like existential dread, honestly. And I feel like some people commented, you know, this is like kind of like the millennial story, like
energy.
No, it's like yeah. a story early 2000s. They're like video gamers, and someone was like, "This is like, you know, could be like the picture of like millennials." And I couldn't disagree more. I don't relate to any of those people, and it just was so. Honestly, I don't have another word. Dreadful. Like, I want to say negative or pessimistic, but like it wasn't necessarily, but it was just extremely like not upsetting, but like just had a pit the whole time. But it was like they're so successful. Like, life's great. Like, where do we want to go? Who do we want to be? We're at the top of our game. We're doing exactly what we want to do. And it's like no one can just be happy. Not even close.
Wasn't it so well written?
Yes. No, and I could recognize it is a good book. So for that reason, I gave it a 4. I think for other people, it's like a 5. But and for me, it was probably I probably enjoyed it at a level of a 3. But I gave it a 4 because of all those reasons stated. Then I read The Only Woman in the Room by Marie Benedict. We love Marie Benedict over here. She wrote The Personal Librarian. She's a historical fiction queen, always finds a compelling woman in history and then tells their story. This was about Hedy Lamarr, who is a real person. She was a famous actress, and I'd heard her name. She was in like movies in the 50s and 60s, but what I didn't know was that she's an Austrian Jewess who fled the Holocaust and came to Hollywood because that's where all of the Jews from Europe were going because they couldn't get jobs anymore in Europe because they were Jews and anti-Semitism was on the rise. And so the first half is about her life in Austria, which is so fascinating because she married when she was young, like an Austrian arms dealer, because the war was coming and like she wanted protection and she thought she would be safe with him. But eventually like he like is a piece of shit in a colossal way. So she flees and goes to America. And so the second part of the book is her time in Hollywood. And like, I didn't love that part of the book, honestly. I felt like a lot of it was a reach. And what's crazy about Hedy Lamarr is, like, she was literally the most gorgeous woman of her time, amazing actress. But she was also an inventor, and she, like, invented technology for World War II that she tried to give to the government, but they wouldn't take it. But eventually that technology is actually what powers Wi-Fi now and a lot of other, like, technological advances that we use every single day. And it was weird because it was, like, I read the book, and I was like, if it wasn't a true story, I would have been like, this book is bad because that could never happen. So I don't feel like she did a good enough job of like making the connection of how like Hedy was just an Austrian girl who went to finishing school and now she's inventing Wi-Fi. But that is what happened. So for that reason, I gave it a 4 again. I guess it was a big 4 month for me because it could have been really good, but it missed the mark a little, thus 4.
Feel that.
Dana, how'd you do?
Also 3 books. I read The Perfect Couple by Ellen Hildebrand because Jackie posted it on her story when people were enlisting her help for books. And I was like, ooh, this looks like a cute one. I felt the same way. Yeah, I felt the same way about it. I feel all Ellen Hildebrand books where it's just a quick, nice, solid read. I gave it a 3.2, like just solid. Then I read Lucy by the Sea by Elizabeth Strau. Absolutely loved it. Love this author. Love all of her books. I was going to choose it for the redheads. Good thing I didn't because it's all about the pandemic. And I don't think our readership, as evidenced by our country friends, is as into that storyline. But I thought it was incredible. I gave it a 4.2. Wow. And then I read Less by Andrew Sean Greer. I gave that a 3.3. I liked it. He has a new book out that everyone's talking about, so I wanted to read this one first because they're related. But overall, thought it was pretty good. Nothing crazy.
Great. Okay. Well, I guess it was like a light month for the girlies, but I have some exciting books that I want to read next month, so stay tuned for that. And
we will.
Our next book, which is our last book of the year, is a Dana's choice, and historically, this is where she comes through. We had Addie LaRue, December pick. We had Midnight Library. So the bar is high. What are we reading next month?
It's too much pressure. But we are reading Horse by Geraldine Brooks. It is a severe deviation from my previous choices. It's a little historical fiction, a little out there. It was encouraged by a coveted reader in Jackie's new Florida reader group, and it got good reviews. So I went out on a limb, and it's a risk, but I just hope, you know, you guys like it enough.
Okay.
Wow.
Hopefully.
Love that, yes. For us. Yeah, no.
It'll be interesting.
It does look really good and has really great reviews. And it looks like, you know, a significant book. So that's always nice.
Oh, it looks like a long one, friends.
It's a little long. I was
how long?
Gonna do this. Like Don't worry about it.
How long? Just Brit, tell me.
Over 400 pages.
Okay.
Like, that's doable.
I'm going to say five. That's okay.
And then I was going to pick Jodi Picoult's new book because
I'm on strike. I'm on Jodi Picoult's strike after the last
Jackie
book.
Was on strike. And that one was like 450 pages. So
okay,
I was
this
like,
one's like 430 pages.
Right. So I was like, I can't pick a Jodi Picoult book that might be worse. That's even longer. Right. Like, at least like
a Jodi Picoult book. What's the topic of Jodi's book?
It was kind of weird. It was like a family and a son who was in the library all the time reading and learned. It wasn't a compelling enough for me to pick it. I just got good reviews, but like, I don't know if that's just because it's Jodi.
I just feel like she always feels like whatever like the cultural zeitgeist she'll write about.
Yeah. It didn't feel so relevant. I can't even remember what it was about, but she just makes me nervous. Like, I don't trust her.
Yeah. No, I'm so burned. I will never recover. And I didn't have, like, I hadn't read anything else by her, so it was my one and only experience.
Oh, no, you gotta read her old stuff. It's so good, but, like, her new stuff ain't it.
Yeah, so I'm really excited, though. No, I heard great things about Horse, and even all the reviews on Goodreads are stellar. So that's what we'll be reading. Thank you so much, Dana. Thank you, Becky, for this great choice. Thank you, Snitch, for joining us. And thank you to all of our listeners and fellow readers out there. We hope that you liked reading along with us this month. And make sure to follow us at The Redheads on Instagram, where we post really premium content, honestly. A mixture of the book we're reading this month, what we've read in the past months, some book dumps, some funny book reading memes. You never know what you're going to get. And our merch is available at shopmorningtoast.com. So make sure to check it all out, and we will see you in December. Have a great month, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
But let's just call this November Redemption.
Yes, I think we can call this a November Redemption. But you know what? Let's see how we feel in a year from now. You know, that's the real test. Okay. I feel like I like every book right when we finish it. Even Luis Velez, we were like, this is so beautiful.
I still love Luis Velez.
But then it's like, does it age in your mind?
I think Hesta's going to age like a fine wine.
Oh, you know what? Hold on, everyone. Before I let you go, I recently made a spreadsheet with all of our ratings and like – in order, so I could tell you where this book ranks against some of our other Redheads ratings, if you're interested. Anyone?
Yes.
Interested.
Very interested.
I thought you'd never ask.
Okay, so we've never done a ranking based on our Redheads rating of the episode. So based on that, what we rated the highest while we, like, in the episode was Before We Were Strangers is our number one book, in case anyone is a new listener and wants to know what books we liked best. I'll go in order. Number two is I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, 4.575. Number three is A Flicker in the Dark, 4.4.
So good.
Number four is The Nature of Fragile Things, 4.35.
So good.
Number five was The Midnight Library, 4.325. And six, Lessons in Chemistry, is tied for at 4.325. Seven, Nothing to See Here. Eight, Invisible Life of Addie LaRue. Nine, We Are the Brennans. Whoa. 10, Girls with Bright Futures. Some of this is like not.
Justice for Clara.
Yeah, no, some of this is like really crazy. And of course, the last one is Our Country Friends. But 3.8 means that this is tied for number 15 with Run, Rose, Run.
That feels
what
right.
Do you think? That feels right.
No, I think it was better than Run, Rose, Run.
What's right below Run, Rose, Run?
14 or 16?
16.
Four Winds. Oof.
Oof. Oof.
It was a good book, though, but it was just like a lot.
Yeah.
That was dreadful.
I'll share the spreadsheet with you guys. Take a look at it. Let me know.
Please do.
Let me know your thoughts. Okay. Love you guys. Have a great rest of the month. Bye.
Bye.
Love you. Redheads.